Chicago, not as much a city as a string of neighborhoods. And it's the issues of the people who live in those neighborhoods that should be front and center before the runoff. Alas, mudslinging and big-ticket items like corruption or who did what in the past is taking center stage. That's why we're getting out into the neighborhoods, touring places like Jefferson Park and Chatham or Beverly and South Shore. Tonight, we head to Damon Avenue to talk Bucktown Wicker Park. If there's one neighborhood that's not crying for economic development, this might be it. The areas in the near northwest side of the city, think Ashland to Western, Division up to Armitage. This used to be considered the creative center of Chicago, with beatniks and artists creating a unique oasis along North Damon and Milwaukee. If you look closely, you could see some of the remnants of that bygone era. Local boutiques now replaced by Banana Republics, and coffee shops are now the Nike store. Politically, this ward is famous. It's the 32nd Ward, a ward once run by the powerful Dan Rostenkowski. But that was back when it was mostly Polish and Latino. Today, the ward is run by a different boss, a progressive boss, Alderman Scott Wagesback. But these changes, the supersized development, it's a good problem to have, right? Maybe. But my friend Eitan McHaley has lived in Bucktown for 30-plus years, so he's seen the changes up close and personal, almost like a lobster in a boiling pot. Eitan is the author of the great book on the legendary newspaper, The Defender, and he's been a public housing journalist and advocate for years. He chose the place, the new Roby Hotel, right at North Damon in Milwaukee. It used to be a nondescript office building, a perfect place to gaze out on the famous intersection to talk about the old and the new. How do you see this neighborhood?
Well, it's not the same neighborhood that I moved into when I first came here. It's the people are different, the businesses are different, the feel is different. And that's sometimes jarring, sometimes fun, sometimes useful, and sometimes sad. Because the families that I used to hang out with are all gone. The types of families that I used to hang out with in the neighborhood are all gone. It's just it's a completely different place, except it's the same location on the map.
You know, for you to say that families have left, there has been a constant swing of gentrification through this area for the last 20 years. I can't even think of who's being replaced now. I would think that uber rich are coming in.
I mean, if you go down into Bucktown and walk down Hoyne Street, you're going to find no end of multi-million-dollar homes. I mean, these are places well into the millions, you know? And these are blocks that used to be apartments for working-class people. And you'd have a small rooms, small compartments, not a lot of closet space. You know, it was late 19th century architecture. Now it's a totally different density and everything else. It's a really it's complicated to talk about because I take advantage of many of the new amenities that are here.
Right.
My kid goes to school in the neighborhood. The school has definitely changed as along with everything else in the neighborhood. I don't want to be hypocritical say like, oh, it's, you know, gentrification is awful, or go the other way and say that gentrification is this wonderful thing, because the reality is that most of the people, as I said a moment ago, that I was with when I came to the neighborhood are not benefiting from those amenities the way that I have. I've been lucky, and I'm also lucky that I have a family that can help me stay here, you know?
Right. This area, you look out the window and you see restaurants and retail places that have replaced restaurant and retail places. It's a very interesting concept. But as the election goes, I know that the alderman here is a very progressive alderman, one of the leads the progressive caucus. Is this a progressive neighborhood in Chicago?
That's a tough term that I try to avoid. Like, I'll throw it around here and there, but depending on the context, you could say progressive, you could say liberal, you could say left, you could say a lot of different things. Let's speak in terms that are more Chicago historical, right? This is a goo-goo neighborhood. This is a good government neighborhood. This is a place where people pay a lot in taxes, especially these days property taxes, and they want to see value for that outlay.
Investment, right.
And most of the time, they're not particularly concerned about the status of public services other than that, other than how much is it costing me. They're not talking about the availability of public housing in this neighborhood. They're not talking about the availability of job training, or really, even in terms of the police department, you know, we'll have complaints in terms of the police aren't deploying enough to stop the occasional carjacking. There was a flurry of carjackings, I think, last year, being committed by one group of people, and once they got arrested,
it stopped.
It stopped. Right. That's the kind of crime that we have here.
What do residents, your neighbors in Bucktown, Wicker Park, especially with this election cycle, what are they talking? What are the issues that are facing a neighborhood like
this? Schools are definitely an issue. Schools are the one area of public services where the wealthy, even anybody but the uber wealthy, meets everyone else, right? Because even upper middle class families in Chicago are still looking to take advantage of the public schools. Upper middle class white families in Chicago on the north side of the city do not want charter schools. They don't like charter schools. They don't see the brand names that they recognize, and they don't think that they're getting quality as a result, right? So that's not popular with them. They're not going to ask for more charters. This is not New York or Washington.
They're just out of the reach of private schools.
That's right. They're not going to send their kids to a Parker or a Latin school or somewhere like that because, frankly, they're too expensive for this demographic. So what they're looking for are quality public schools that they feel that they can comfortably send their kids to. There's code words for that. You can call it a magnet school. You can call it a selective enrollment school. And there's different categories for each of those things. So they're interested in that kind of stuff. And as I said, they're interested really in how to keep the costs of things like property taxes from ballooning.
It is interesting because, yeah, of course, you talk about coded language, and there's a lot of it when you talk about schools in Chicago. And you could make an argument that the CPS as we know it now and the one under this mayor has recognized that the upper middle class, the white families of the north side of Chicago, have a choice to make. And the choice is they may flow to DuPage County, to Lake County, to other places where schools are on the register, they're on the up and up, or he's going to have to make a play to keep them here in Chicago. Do you see it that way?
I think Mayor Emanuel, all across the board, he's leaving, and he's leaving on his own recognizance, right? So we can, it might be gentle to give him a break, but I'm not going to do that. He's been daft. He doesn't understand the city, he doesn't know the city, and he doesn't care about the city. And when it comes to the needs of middle-class families and schools, he did not understand what his predecessor did, which is that you have to keep pace by continuing to add new schools to the roster that upper-middle-class families find acceptable. That's to keep them happy, that you can go into all the different moral judgments about whether that's a good use of resources, whether that's okay, whether you're taking resources from the poor and giving it to other folks. That's all fair. But the reality is that Mayor Daley understood that if he did not continue expanding the rosters of the Northside College Preps, the Lane Techs, the Whitney Youngs, if he didn't keep adding schools that were like that to his portfolio, he was going to lose those upper middle class families. And before he was going to lose them as residents, he was going to lose them as voters.
Right.
So he understood that he had to do that. Mayor Emanuel has done nothing to expand that roster, and the result is that the increasing number of upper middle class families in the city are facing ridiculous levels of competition. Petition for those schools that leaves them frustrated and angry and, as I said, jaded about the mayor in office right now. The next mayor is going to have to understand that they're going to either expand the offerings that are there for those families or lose them. And both are choices.
Or would that be the number one thing you, as a resident of this neighborhood, if you had a closed door in the first week with the new mayor, would go after talking about schools? What do you think the biggest issues are that if you had a chance to talk to the mayor are for the community you live in?
Well, I'm the wrong person to talk to as an advocate for this neighborhood, frankly, because to quote Lori, right, frankly, but because I feel like this neighborhood is doing fine, and there are other parts of the city that need the mayor's attention more immediately, right? Schools on the South Side are not, even the best schools on the South Side need a lot more attention than what they're getting. I would say the most immediate thing that the city has got to deal with is the depleted, demoralized status of the CPD, which, as someone who has covered on and off police issues for 30-something years, I've never seen the Chicago Police Department in worse shape. I've never seen it less professionally run. I've never seen the officers more confused and vague about what they're even supposed to be doing. I've seen the training fall behind. I've even seen things like the equipment kind of go from adequate to junky. They don't even have the equipment that they need. The new mayor has got to immediately do something to fix the police department, and it starts maybe with the federal consent decree, but that's just the beginning.
I'm fascinated because, you know, it's a city, when you look around, here we are in the Roby Hotel, there's young people everywhere. Everyone's got their laptops up, they're hanging out here, their headphones in, everybody's doing... You walk down North Avenue or Damon, it's all sorts of boutiques, and it is geared towards what I think to be a younger demographic. Is that what you see? Is Chicago a young town? Is there more young people coming to Chicago than, say, when we were younger?
Yes and no. It's more young white people. The city is cool for young white people now, but young black people are leaving. You know, young, ambitious, talented, educated black people are the first to leave. And they're leaving sometimes for the South Suburbs, sometimes for nearby areas or nearby cities. They're also going to the South. They're going to places like Atlanta, Texas, places where there's opportunity and better weather, of course, but a more friendly environment for African Americans. Sad to say that, because this city was for so long a destination for African Americans seeking political freedom, right? The ones from the South, we've kind of mythologized the Great Migration, but the reality is they came here looking for political opportunity as much as economic opportunity, and now they're leaving, I have to say, for the same reasons. So this neighborhood reflects also something else, because remember, what's happening here is the boutiques are changing into Urban Outfitters, right?
The Nike Swish on the old Mad Bar, I saw that.
Right, the chef's restaurant, you know, that was doing, you know, Korean tacos is turning into native foods, you know what I mean? Brands are starting to take over. This is starting to look more like Lincoln Park than it is, you know, a kind of edgy neighborhood like
that. Crazy though, to think about, because this was the hotbed. This was where independent thought was fostered, and in a way, I think about the 90s here. I remember there was a protest on North Avenue because the real world took over a building over here. That's where we were at, where we were just like, you're not taking over our neighborhood. And then you see, you flash, you blink your eyes at 2019, and it's a Nike Swish, and like you said, these brand names that are up and down, and that fight is long gone. That this neighborhood is not what Wicker Park used to mean.
But that fight was, respectfully, was over before the protesters started protesting the real world. Those protesters were the same demographic, the same background, probably grew up next door to the people filming the real world as well as the people living in the real world house, you know? It's all the same folks. The neighborhood was already gone by that point,
right.
You know? Or was past the tipping point? Right, the Latino families, you know, were already on their way out. And listen, to be fair, American cities are not set up for longevity in terms of who stays in a neighborhood. We're set up, the real estate industry in the whole country is set up to turn this stuff over and over again.
One of the issues is the inequality in the city, the haves and the have-nots. We sit here in a perfect example of a city neighborhood that used to be accessible for even people like myself and Pete, who'd come in and get a two-bedroom for moderately priced and hop the blue line to get downtown. That's not an option anymore. This is a different neighborhood. Do you see that, someone who's covered the history of Chicago? Are the patterns the same? Is the haves and the have-nots, is the inequality, is it cyclical like in the history of this town?
This is a different kind of inequality than what we've had, because the highs are a lot higher. The lows are not necessarily lower than historical, moments, but we have to go back to like the Depression to see the kind of homelessness, entrenched homelessness that we see in the city today. On Ashland Avenue, there's the Night Ministry, the well-known homeless services provider, wants to open a shelter. And you had dozens, maybe hundreds of people coming out to say they don't want this in the neighborhood. It's, to me, ironic because there have been, in the 30 years since I've lived here, there have been people living under the viaducts on the highway on Armitage, North, and Webster more or less the entire time that I've lived here. And nobody really complains about that except to say, let's get those people out of there, right? Nobody says, like, well, we got to find them a place to live. We got to get them some services. We got to make them capable of living on their own. Nobody wants that. They just want them gone. And now people are saying that the Night Ministry is going to be some kind of threat. This is, like, literally a stone's throw away from where people
where they
are
were.
Already
They
living.
Already are.
Yeah. So what's different now is that a lot of times it's the same people who have now been homeless for decades. It's the same. I see the same faces of people that have been on, under those viaducts almost as long as I've lived in this neighborhood. They're getting old along with me. That's a different kind of poverty. It's an insidious kind of poverty because it's so obvious that we're just, you know, holding back the floodgates of resources from these people because we just don't think they deserve it.